This is a Pinball News production.
Before we get started, I would sincerely like to say thank you to... I see a lot of customers out in the audience. We came down here last year as this tiny little company hoping to eke out an existence and left knowing we were going to get through at least another year, and pretty much blew us all away. Changed Katie and I, or my whole family's life, essentially. Shortly after we left Texas, we got back. We gave our two employees a raise, thanked them for their patience while we were getting the company launched. Shortly after that, we hired Katie, and I'm very proud to say that we sold like 60 games here last year. All of them are out there. You have them. We don't have any more. They're gone. So we're kind of proud of that. But thank you, everybody, sincerely, for supporting and believing in us and taking a chance on Spooky Pinball. So hope we're just getting started.
Well said.
You even restored Ben Heck's faith in pinball.
They did?
They did.
Okay. So, yeah, this is going to be the Spooky Pinball Talk. Our topics are going to include, Chuck's going to talk about his new shop, the new production facilities. Then David and I and Chuck are going to talk about the development of Rob Zombie and show you some of our behind-the-scenes storyboards. And then finally, Chuck and Blake are going to talk about the new game, the Domino's game.
Yeah.
So stay tuned.
Quit.
All right, which folder do you want?
Don't open the one called Our Next Game.
So don't open this folder.
Yeah.
So you don't want to show off your My Little Pony photos?
No, I'm afraid Steve Ritchie will kill me in the hall.
Just go in sequence here? What?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to start with number one then. You ready?
Sure.
All right, here we go.
All right, this is the vacant, empty lot in Benton, Wisconsin. This is exactly... oh, I'd say maybe 150 yards from where we were renting our shop last year when we came down here.
That's really interesting. Hold on, I'm going to go on pin side and post that. No?
Go to the next slide, Ben. That's not real interesting. Oh, there's another view of the empty lot, and there's another. All the way back to the tree line
it's
where...
a grassy knoll!
Oh, Ben, you can't do that joke down here.
Oh, crap, that's right! Forgot what city I was in. Hashtag too soon.
This is actually in January in Wisconsin, so the fact that they can dig a foundation and pour concrete at that time of year up there is pretty remarkable. There's the old concrete slab. There is Squirrel Mutt inspecting her new home. Here's the building being delivered. There's a very artistic shot in a snowstorm of the framing going
you
up.
You weren't just drunk when you took this?
No.
To fall over? Okay.
Siding going up, windows going in. This whole process essentially took about 6 weeks.
Didn't you say it took longer to get the permits from the state than it did to actually
build it? It took longer to get the permits from the state than it did to put the building up.
Ooh, wow, an
air conditioning. Ooh, air conditioning, yes. Pretty cool. It's pretty deluxe. Blowing in all the insulation.
Chuck, maybe you should talk about, why you moved your shop.
Sure. Thank you for that helpful comment. Insulation going in the attic. Yeah, I mean, we had completely overgrown. We were in about 1,900 square feet in our rental space in the old shop. And there was stuff all over the hallways. And this is essentially in Benton, Wisconsin. We have what's called a business incubator, where it's a very... small county. There's not a lot of industry. There's not a lot of job growth, anything like that going on. So they put up this business incubator, which gives you affordable rent and access to freight and shipping and, loading docks, things that are really expensive to get and build, and, forklifts are already there. So by the time we left Texas last year, we were already overflowing that. Get back home, start building all the games that we sold down here. And this is in the old shop. I mean, we're just shoehorned into this place. It was time for us to move and build our own shop. And the village of Benton is so behind us that they literally gave us an acre of land, cost us a dollar.
Well, now you can pay tax on it.
And now we can pay tax on it, yes. So they're very happy about this. This is the inside of the new shop. You can see the last of the America's Most Haunteds being built.
That was a couple weeks ago.
weeks.
Yeah, this is this is. Yeah, we've already overfilled the new shop too. So.
Hey, look, a green America's Most Haunted.
Super rare.
That's gonna be 10.
How many of those are there, KT?
I want to say 7, maybe 8.
So 8 out of 150 are green.
These got to be Rob Zombie cabinets.
Yeah, this is the kind of the crossover. You can see we've added some more stuff down the center of the aisle here. Hired more employees. We have another cabinet maker. We have another playfield maker. All these cabinets are the Rob Zombie cabinets. You can see some of them are decaled. Some of them are already assembled. Here's kind of the last remaining three America's Most Haunteds. And a mix of Rob Zombie, so you can see we're already in production, technically.
Waiting on circuit boards.
Waiting on circuit boards.
It's in the code.
This is the new print room. This is where we print, laminate all the decals, laser cut in here. It's all clean room, separated from the rest of the building, something we did not have in the old facility.
You don't want to get dust on
it. Yeah,
laminator.
Yeah.
There's your dog again.
There's Squirrel Mutt chilling in the executive VIP office suite. As you can tell, we don't really have an office. We have a desk in the middle of the floor. I work like everybody else. Oh, look, there's the Domino's game that was a big secret when I took that photo. There's the old Rob Zombie prototype back in the corner. And an America's Most Haunted, of course. We got to keep one of those.
Your Mystery Science Theater Ball reminds me of a story to tell you later about that.
Okay.
Well, this is a riveting shot here.
Jeff. Yeah, this is our small assembly area. You can see the wire harness looms and stuff in the background. We do all our own wire harnesses, everything in there. As you can see here, there's stacks and stacks of wire on the shelves. I mean, let's go Gary Stern. How many miles of wire do we have in the shop right now, KT?
We had 3 pallets worth. That's all I know. It's just 3 pallets worth of wire.
We spent more on wire last month than we spent on the startup of our company 3 years ago. Again, here's more production going on. Here's our playfield assembly areas. Doing a little pre-work on the playfields for Rob Zombie. Cabinets going together.
Yeah, the early prototypes for America's Most Haunted, we didn't have very much wire, so we were holding the wire with a magic marker to make black stripe wire. So we've come a little bit further than that.
Here are the restrooms and the murderous mechanical room. Of course, you can see the Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man sign over the men's and ladies' room. The new signs
that'll
go out in the spring when we can break ground and actually plant them.
Oh, is that the end of the folder? Chuck?
It might be. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Let me just see. Where is it? Stupid Windows 10. God. I mean, Windows 10 is the greatest operating system ever made. I believe it may have been the last photo. Yes, that's it.
Okay, so that's like a quick tour of the new Spooky Pinball facility that you all helped build. So, there's a folder at the top called Fun Stuff. You can click on that if you want. There's just a few. Okay, this is when we went to record the dialogue with actor Sid Haig, Captain Spaulding from the Rob Zombie films. We did it at a horror convention, and this was... The guy there hugging KT is John Amplis. He was in Creepshow. He was in Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Martin. He was the star of Martin. So if you're into any George Romero horror stuff. Anyway, Katie was in theater with him when she lived in Pittsburgh at what age?
Third and fourth grade.
So they hadn't seen each other since then. And she comes in and she just sets down these scrapbooks that her mother had made of her, and John was the play director. He played Scrooge in A Christmas Carol.
The first year he played Scrooge, the second year he was our director. So
yeah, I mean, he thought it was so cool that, you know, she brought all this back to share, and they reminisced. And we just thought it was a cool moment.
He actually still is working at the college and runs the playhouse that we did A Christmas Carol in.
He was Nathan's corpse in Creepshow, so if you've ever seen that film, he's, "Where's my cake, Bedelia?" That's him. Here's a little photo shoot we did out in front of the shop one day. I think the tagline here was, "We're small but powerful." There's Bug holding back in America's Most Haunted, being pushed by our old truck with one finger and no muscles in his muscle shirt. Another ad with the kids, custom built with pride and craftsmanship.
Squirrel looks mad.
Oh, sorry, I was posing.
And this was just a little something fun Katie and I did the day that we signed the
the agreement with the state to take over the land for the new shop. We were just screwing around having fun.
You guys look a lot more lively here. Then you had to build it, and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah. If I did that now, I'd be like, ugh.
Yeah.
There's Brian Kelly eating a world-famous Lawrence's cheeseburger. Everything is bigger in Texas? I don't think so.
They have really good pizza.
Oh, here's Katie in her koala outfit that Dom and Chris from Pizza and Pinball in Newcastle, Australia sent her. So she actually has a koala outfit.
No, no, you can't
I thought
talk.
That was a real koala for a second. I'm impressed.
Wait, go back to that for a second. Why does the dog look so depressed right now? She looks so ashamed of Mom in this photo.
Really, Mom? What? This was a fun moment. Terry at Pinball Life, who is our biggest parts supplier and a wonderful, wonderful help to Spooky Pinball partner, you might as well call him. He's an awesome dude. He has his big open house before Pinball Expo in Chicago, and he's like, hey, let's see if we can get Ed from Bare Naked Ladies to come play at the thing. And I'm like, don't you have enough stuff going? Oh, we need a celebrity. Ed's not available. He's doing a charity function that weekend. And I'm like, what about Sven Gulli? Who the hell is Sven Gulli? He's a local horror host. He's all over the nation now. Everybody, you know, it'll work. Trust me. All right, well, so Terry and I get Sven Gulli to show up, and I mean, it literally was lines out the door waiting for this guy, and Terry's like, well, I don't know who he is, but he sure draws a crowd. There's us with Sven holding his favorite rubber chicken, of course.
That was when we auctioned off the last AMH, right? Yeah, Sven
yes.
Gulli auctioned it off.
Yes, he did.
Oh, that's Beaker from the band Beaker. They're famous for the song Squirrel Killer, so he's hanging out with Squirrel Mutt and her squirrel.
So squirrel's eating a squirrel here.
Yes.
Interesting.
This is the, you won't see this ever again, this is the one and only yellow squirrel edition of the Domino's back glass because our daughter drives a yellow Volkswagen. So I asked them if it was okay if we made one glass for our shop game that was representative of Squirrel's car. And there's actor Sid Haig. The dude is a horror movie legend. He's been around since, like, Vincent Price. He worked with Lon Chaney Jr. He was in all of Rob Zombie's movies. And this is literally us in Sid's hotel room recording the dialogue that you hear in Rob Zombie Spook Show International.
Wow, they got a lot of adapters here.
That's fascinating.
I think it is. Is that it?
I think so.
Okay.
As you can tell, Ben does have ADD, so...
What were we talking about?
Do you want to go to Rob Zombie Development? Do you want to do your stuff first? Or?
We can go through your folder here. No problem. Which one do you want to start with?
I don't know what that is. Let's click on it.
Sketches and art.
We'll start with sketches and art.
All right, here you go. This is...
Ship it. Done.
Artist Alex Horley. And Ben's going to have to bounce back and forth between some of these so you can see. This is the original... concept sketch for the back glass. If you can see, like in the first picture, go back, there you go. You get the gal in the corner with the sickle. Oh, I don't know what she's doing. She's killing somebody. Kind of there she's going. Frankenstein up in the corner is changing. Suddenly Rob decides it needs one. Keep going. There you go. Now the robot's getting added in. And these are all changes. I mean, Rob was so hands-on with all of this. And this is literally how Alex Horley works. You talk about, you know, everybody wants hand-drawn art in a game. You can't get more hand-drawn than this. This man literally sketches it, gets a concept, gives it to Rob. Rob looks at it, reports back what he likes, what he doesn't. When he finally gets a pencil sketch that Rob likes, go ahead. He goes to a watercolor to kind of get the colors close to what Rob would like to see. So this is an early watercolor sketch of the Rob Zombie back glass. And then from there, there's another watercolor version. From there, he goes to a full-on oil painting. Oil painting on a pinball machine. He has a young assistant who comes in once the canvas is dry, scans it, cleans it up in Photoshop, and kicks it over to us. So that's how the Rob Zombie art was developed. And there's KT holding the autographed... Yeah, in the spot on the house that Rob helped us build, apparently.
The house of 1,000 corpses that Rob built.
These are early Playfield sketches, and it's fun working with Rob because he is so hands-on, but his direction would drive Ben Heck off
the deep end, no doubts about it.
Too late.
Because he's like, okay, Rob, you know, what should we do for the back glass? Here's the modes. Here's the story behind the game. Here's what we're doing. He's like, no, just throw me on there with a bunch of monsters. Or how about I'm driving the Dragula and just running over everybody? That's his direction. So
we did have one thing. There's no exposed nipple.
Yes.
But other than that, we're like, go for it.
Yes.
Because you can't, you know, you don't have a family mode on the artwork, unfortunately. You can't toggle it. Well, maybe P3 could. Yeah. And here's the LE back glass.
There you can see the clown on the left is being turned into Captain Spaulding. And again, none of this is really actually in the game. The basic sketch of the car is. Then it's starting to get a little closer to what it wound up being here.
Do you want to tell the logo story?
Oh, yeah. You can see the original logo there. That is like the official Rob Zombie Spook Show International logo. He's used that on his comic books and tons of other merchandise over the years. So I recreated it in Vector, and we put it on there. And Ben was instantly like, it sucks. You can't use it. I'm like, well, it's kind of his logo. So,
well, the main problem is the word international looks like something from PowerPoint.
Yeah.
That was
Ben's like, you can't use it. This sucks. He's like, have you asked Rob if he can change it? I'm like, man, I don't know if I can bring up the courage to even try that.
So we're sitting there in the shop one night working on different things, and I'm like, oh, I'll just email him and ask. So I shoot him an email, and he gets back like 5 minutes later. Yeah, I agree. My logo totally sucks. Needs to be updated. Yeah, needs to be updated. So I did like 15 different versions of his logo, and he was giving me some direction, but he wasn't really saying what he wanted. He's the only rock star I know that says, you know what, I got a weekend off. I'll go into Photoshop and I'll come up with something.
Accidentally leave the wrong photo.
Oh, no, that's in there on purpose. Back up there, Mr. Heck.
Sorry.
So anyway, Rob literally on Monday morning sends me the Rob Zombie Spook Show International in a black style, and then I had to go in and do all the color. But he literally created the logo for the game. Yeah. He was just like, yeah, this
over
works better. Over the weekend in Photoshop. I don't know a lot of rock stars that are smart enough to pull that off. He is. If you look up in the corner on the left-hand side, that is the American Witch. Her real name is Stacy Walker. She is the fiance of artist Alex Horley. That's her. So cover your eyes, children. But, yeah. She's actually on the playfield and in the back glass, and she does a lot of modeling. She's at Comic-Con every year. She does a lot of cosplay stuff and things like that. So just a little side fact.
I really like how the lightning has the rim lighting on the characters. It gets a nice 3D effect.
Mm-hmm. Here's some early playfield development, and Rob was very adamant about what he wanted. He says, just put my face down there, dreads flying everywhere, tombstone behind me, keep it clean and keep it classic, which I agree.
Here again is the American Witch, kind of, she's getting moved around a bit. Oh, here's where we get the cabinet style, and again, we're, hey, Rob, here's the story of the game, here's the script. What do you want to do? And he's like, nope, I want me killing robots on the side, like in outer space. Okay. And yeah, the original sketch you can see there, Sherry's not in the bottom corner. Rob's like, I gotta have my wife by my side no matter what. So Alex had to sketch her in. That's actually from like Lords of Salem, kind of. It's the same motif in the costume, and then there's the finished artwork.
So you can, they're going to sell this as a big art piece, right? That's why he made it square, even though the cabinet.
Yes. Alex Horley literally hand-painted all of this stuff for real. And if anybody would be interested in purchasing the original artwork on this game, it is available. Come talk to me. He's got both back glass sketches in the side. Rob buys a lot of this stuff from Alex, but there was so much involved in this game that he couldn't take it all. So that stuff is available. If you did want a one-of-a-kind, unique piece of pinball artwork, it's there.
Cool. Did you want to talk about the dots, David?
Yeah.
All right. Let me load that up. Oh, once you give us... You take that one, you take
yeah,
that one.
Let me load it up while you do the preface.
Well, I mean...
Should we...
This is David Van Ness. He is our dot animation specialist from Houston, Texas, which is fun working with David. As you'll find out very soon, he's Aussie. He's cool. He's wonderful. He sent me Vegemite.
Yes.
And Ben does not agree.
You just got to
eat it. Did you eat it?
I did.
Is it gone?
It's not gone.
I don't think so.
We're saving it for
you. You use it sparingly. I've learned this.
Yes, it's more butter than Vegemite.
So here Ben will show you his storyboard ideas and how it translates to the awesome dot animations that you actually see in the game.
My opinion of Vegemite was like if you had a bullion cube made out of jelly and you spread it on food.
That's
it's like,
well,
this is like 1,000% of your lifetime salt allowance. But whatever. So yeah, David and I worked on storyboards before we did the dots because... Well, actually, Davey, you should talk about the other pins you've helped with or at least been tangentially involved with.
Do we want to go down that path?
Well, it just gives you, you know, like, this is like where I came from. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's how we kind of got introduced to each other, right? Through John Popadick. So I was doing the animations on Magic Girl, that alien thing that, you know, your game you was involved
oh,
in.
Oh, you mean the zombie game.
Yeah, the zombie game.
Yeah, who knows what the theme of that was supposed to be.
And then I was... Then that all happened. And at the same time, while that was happening, I was also working with Skip B. So, you know, so I've really been involved with a lot of companies that just haven't gone anywhere.
We rescued David.
Which actually scared me. I'm like, are you sure he's not cursed?
He was like a little lost kitten along the road.
So it's just like, you know, knowing Jeremy Packer and that, it's like we got to the point, it's like we really want to work on a game that we can be passionate about. And that's, you know, it's like...
And that will get made.
Yeah.
And that will
exactly,
get made.
Exactly, get made. It's at the end of the day. I've been restoring games for a while now, and I'll be honest with you, I want to get more involved in the industry, so I just kept knocking on people's doors until they actually saw what I could do. And yeah, that's why we got stick figures up here.
So David and I discovered this really awesome collaboration tool, and that is to use Microsoft OneNote. I have a Wacom tablet, so you can actually have multiple people in the same document updating it at once, so it's really good for hashing out storyboards. And if we ever get, well, we're also working on movie stuff. This would be a great tool for movie making as well.
And it's free, too.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, you don't even need an Office subscription to use OneNote. So what we would do is we would get on Skype, also a Microsoft product. No, we're not being paid by Microsoft to say all this. And we would basically hash out everything. And, you know, we drew everything in the aspect ratio. And we're like, okay, well, the woman's in one layer. The Super Beast is in another layer. This is all changed, of course.
Yeah, this is the original Super Beast. So essentially, you're playing as the Beast chasing down the girl for lunch.
What?
So,
Skimpy tank top.
Oh, yeah. See, I even drew in the nipple. It's pinball.
You haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah. But we kind of did this because, you know, I had done America's Most Haunted, but I wasn't going to have time to do all the dots for this game. So that's why David helped. And it's good, too, because more people get to work on the game. So I at least was like, okay, well, here's, you know, kind of what I'm thinking for the modes. So we did all this, and then you just like when you make a movie, David took this and ran with it. Oh, and then one thing we did was we would, what was it? We would draw the squares.
Yes.
Like you would draw, you would be drawing, because you didn't have a Wacom tablet.
Yeah, I can.
But you could draw nice squares.
Exactly. So I would literally go ahead of him and draw out the
It was
boxes.
Like laying railroad track. So I go ahead, next square. Did this, oh yeah, we have the, this is in the game, right? The frame around the creature?
Yeah, that's Dead City. Yep. That's the Dead City mode.
But yeah, basically, you know, since I had done AMH, I had a good idea of like, even though I didn't program Rob Zombie, I was like, well, these are the things you should have. You should have like mode complete, and then what the score is. You know, all the video stuff. It's like
Ben's
we need this
most,
many pieces.
Ben's most common comment was, "Where's the score? I need to know how many players are on there. I can't read that."
Which he's just repeating everything he heard on Pinside about AMH.
Yeah. Hey, no,
so Ben,
that
if,
stuff.
If you had to program Rob Zombie and do all the dots, would we be sitting here talking to you today?
No, I'd be dead from exhaustion. but, I mean, a lot of this stuff is pretty much how it looks in the game, you know. We're talking, okay, like, you know, boil the mode down to however many words you can fit on the screen. We're talking about having, like, a double-high display a game or two in the future, like Frankenstein. And it's not really the resolution that is a problem. It's the aspect ratio.
Yep.
When you know, 4:1 or whatever it is.
It's like working in CinemaScope.
Yeah, it's like Ben-Hur the pinball.
With 92 pixels.
Yeah, see, this is the poorly drawn robot. And I was like, oh yeah, the robot gets hit. If you get the skill shot, the robot gets successively damaged. And then if you get the third shot, it explodes. Skill shot complete. Yeah, see, we even like drew out here's the shots. Because David hasn't seen the game until this weekend.
Yeah, this is actually the first time I've seen it, touched it, and played it. So I was absolutely terrified.
And I was really big on having squish and squash. So, like, when you have animation, like, if someone gets hit, like a robot, it has to go back and then react. And, like, so if you have, like, a punch, if you just have the fist go across the screen and stop, it looks not so great. But if it goes and it causes a little bit of follow-through animation, it looks a lot better. And that was a big thing. I was like, oh, yeah, follow-through animation, blah, blah, blah. Like, on the ghost in America's Most Haunted, if you hit the female ghost, like, her boobs bounce. You know, you got to have that realism in the games. I think the next one is the infamous one. There may be a parental warning on this one.
You want to take this one? I know you enjoyed this one the most.
Oh, God, no. I vetoed this. I was overruled.
Yeah, even, like, right here, I'm like, okay, here's what, you know, talked about what to call the file names. So the files you export, you know, David Fawcett, the programmer, doesn't have to rename anything to make the process faster. But, you know, we wanted lots of blood and gore, you know, bloody limbs, violence. So here's the legs being chopped. So this is the infamous ball save animation. So what was
there's no kids here, right?
It was like,
good.
What is the most disgusting thing we can do, right?
Well, it was like, it's a ball save. And, like, I mean, I'm not about violence for the sake of violence, but it's literally a ball save. And if we're doing an unrated pinball machine, let's save a ball.
Yeah, so, again, we don't... I think Chuck turns on adult mode at 9 p.m., so that's when you'd see it. But it's a ball sack comes down, a cleaver chops it off, and one testicle is left hanging. Ball saved.
And Ben would just... There's six revisions of this. Like, it didn't move properly enough. It didn't jingle enough.
Yeah.
It didn't.
It's just like boobs. It's skin. It has to have squish and squash.
So, and there's a lot of physics that went into that.
Well, that's what makes an animation look good versus just, like, you know, things sliding across the screen. Like,
absolutely.
You have to have weight to anything, whether it be a severed limb, a nut sack, or a boob.
And we have a lot more different ball saves now. So that's not going to be...
And then what was Rob and his band's reaction when they saw it?
They loved it. They absolutely loved it.
After they flinched.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the same reaction literally, Rob Zombie and John Five and Piggy D, his bass player, are standing there, and they're watching it. And I'm like, okay, now watch what happens when you get CHOP ball safe. And they all go, oh! They're just laughing.
But Sherry was cool with it, right?
Oh, Sherry
she
was,
laughed.
Yeah.
She thought it was funny.
And I'm like, don't worry, we'll turn that off in family mode. And Rob's like, what the F is family mode? And Sherry's like, we don't want that in our game. I'm like, well, I just don't turn it on. It'll be fine.
Right.
No, she said she didn't want family mode in her
yeah,
game.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. She didn't want family mode in the game.
Okay, so the one... thing I did program in Rob Zombie was the video mode, and originally we were going to have something kind of like Harley Davidson or Guns N' Roses, where you run people over, and like most video games you're trying not to hit things, and I'm like, we should be hitting things. It was going to be overhead, and I'm like, nah, let's make it three-dimensional. So basically we're sketching out the layers we need to create, and I was going to have hanging dice, you know, to show the motion of the car, but it took up too much screen space. But yeah, David and I just hashed all this out. Oh, this was going to be a little toy of the Bucking Bronco, right? See in the right-hand corner? So it was going to be like a little, instead of a hula girl, it was going to be a little Sherry Moon toy on a Bucking Bronco. But again, it's hard to resolve that in the resolution we had.
Yes.
So yeah, and then I'm like, I want a big bloody splat, and then a windshield wiper cleans it. And then he hits the next thing. So then it was like, okay, what can he hit, right? So first, yeah. Yes, there you can run over a purple rabbit with a wand in the game. It's worth like 50,000 points. Oh crap! Some of this stuff is slightly inflammatory. And of course, did we actually get a possum in or not?
Yes.
Okay,
you did it.
But okay, so here's a screen cap from the Dragula video. So when we redrew this character of, you know, the demons or whatever, but then we had to kind of make it more 8-bit. And then the witch originally was like, oh, maybe she's flying at the car, but I think she's just standing there. Again, you know, it zooms in. You only have 32 pixels high. It's kind of hard. You have to do the imagery that you can resolve in, like, a second at that resolution. It's kind
you
of
just look at Ben's mind on the witch. You can tell what he was thinking at that stage.
Who did the... David, did you do the music for the video mode?
Yeah. Well, there's a 8-bit synth that you run that stuff through.
Yeah, it literally, when you go to video mode, it's Dragula, but it sounds like
8-bit.
You're playing a Nintendo Entertainment System from, like, 1990. And it's hilarious. The first time I hit it, I didn't know it was in there. These guys did it. You know, I knew there was going to be a video mode and what it was. But it goes to, like, you're playing Nintendo, and you hear that cheesy 8-bit Dragula music. And I was laughing so hard, I couldn't hit anything.
David, apparently we discussed having boobs on a skeleton.
I don't know where that even came from. I seriously have no idea.
Okay, I listened to a couple
Heck,
of your Skypes at night when I had no choice, because he's laying in bed next to me with the laptop, and boobs were like every other word. What are you talking about? You don't know where they came from.
We're 13.
But one thing...
Oh, he's 13.
One thing David and I would discuss is, okay, so corpse counter has how many digits, where's it on the screen, you know, make a frame for it, and have the animations go. So this is like at the end of, well, here's the image, House of a Thousand Corpses, where the girl's going down the corpse room, and like it's a tracking shot. I'm like, oh, that's a perfect repeating shot to have in the game. And then it's like, okay, yeah, how many, like one more hit, two more hit, open the door. So we just went through and just figured out everything that we might need it to say, and then had to do everything over like three times.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Like, it was really important, like, when we're doing the modes, is to make sure every mode represented Rob Zombie in everything he did. So, you know, try and stay true to that.
We had a script. Ben and I and another friend of ours sat in a basement for a weekend just writing script for this game. And the first time, you know, we were kind of short on time and needed to get this done, I presented it to Rob. He looked at it and he goes, like, nope, that sucks.
45 pages.
Yeah. No, that sucks. And it was, Ben had this concept. Ben has to have a concept behind everything.
Oh, you're talking about the original
concept. Yeah, or he can't wrap his head around it. And, you know, you can't just make a pinball machine and have it be fun. He needs a story.
You do need a story.
And you stick to the script. And you do. And Rob was like, nope, don't want it.
Oh, my
it was, you were going to work your way up from, like, roadie,
yeah, roadie
to, you know, eventually be tour manager.
And it turns out all of these creatures are really real, you know. Yeah. It's like, oh, my God, there really is a living dead girl. Yeah. And then the joke is going to be like, you better beat the living dead girl if you want to be my tour manager. We're going to put these dumb audio jokes in it. Remember the big discussion about how ugly the witch should be when she gets burned?
Yep. But no, she had to be good looking because everything in Rob's world is the witches are good looking.
Yep.
So,
but Rob was basically, I want a badass metal horror game. That's it.
Here we go.
Yep. Oh, so like there's family video and dots. So in American Witch, you've got this topless witch shaking her ass. And then in family mode, the witch is the cat.
It's like the kitty cat from the music video as well. So yeah, you get dancing cats.
And we just spend a lot of time talking about, okay, like if you have these coffin targets. See, originally they're going to be in a row, but then we're like, oh, that's too hard to see, so let's put them side by side. This is what's in the actual game. Yeah. Were these the villagers, apparently? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The villagers. Okay. Jackpot! I guess we didn't draw anything for that.
Probably for the best. Yeah.
The wizard mode, I don't think we have anything for that. What was this? Oh, this is the infection overtime.
This is mode, right? Yes. If you suck, this is going to punish you really bad.
I haven't seen anybody hit it yet this weekend, so it's in there.
How many times do you have to foul a main mode?
Twice.
Twice.
Oh, this is where you're spelling the murderers, right?
Yep.
Oh, then we're like, Gein has to light up lampshades. Fish has to be nails. We tried to make everything, you know, fit the murderer.
Again, Ben comes back. David, we need, like, the light switch swinging. Like, when we pull the light on, we got to have the animation of the swing. It's like, I don't think we can even see it.
And again,
there.
All the killers' names and everything, it's all from Rob Zombie's world. Mm-hmm. That stuff's all from House of a Thousand Corpses, which I didn't even know when we signed the deal with Rob. I thought it was strictly music. And he comes back and says, oh, let's put Spalding on the back glass. I'm like, we can do that? I created the character, own the license. As long as you don't use clips from the film, we can use anything from House of a Thousand Corpses you want. Jackpot. That's when we called Sid Haig. Literally, like, how much time did we have to put together with Sid? We put a deal together with him in about a week.
Yeah, it was like less than 10 days.
Yeah. To go get the dialogue recorded with him. And it was,
drove to Indianapolis to get it.
Yeah, it was fantastic. That was just an added bonus.
Yeah, so it has Sid Haig, Sherry Moon, and Rob as the custom voices.
Yep, and it's all custom speech by those three. And there's a ton of it. There might be half of what we actually have in that game right now, would you say, David?
Yep.
About that. I mean,
and we're also going to have a demon voice.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the audio side of it, and then move on to Domino's at the end, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say too much about the audio. It was just literally, I would give audio files that we thought would go with, like, the slings that would match a Rob Zombie game. But honestly, Ben was the biggest help on that because he's experienced America's Most Haunted. I mean, I've never gotten this far making a pinball machine. So it was one of those things of Ben's experience at America's Most Haunted. Like, he was 100% right. Like, even last week, after playing the game, he's like...
2 weeks ago.
Is it 2 weeks? It
feels yeah, like and I'm like, okay, we need to have better sound for this, this, or this. And when you play it now, yeah, like, the Living Dead girl, it's like... It's when you have all these sounds going on at once, you have to think about how they mix together. And so I'm like, you know, I think you had like a rattle, like a shaking coffin.
It was a coffin lid scraping across the top.
And so the idea was like, we have like, doom, 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 like final nails into a coffin. And then when people play it, you hear like, doom, doom, doom. And even if you're not playing the game, you're like, oh, that person is doing this. And it gives it a good audio identity.
Yeah, and it's just like visualizing if you're hitting that outer orbit, you want, you know, Rob Zombie, we want a knife being thrown through the air, hitting the body on the other side. So it was all about... you know, finding sounds that match the action on the playfield.
Yeah, and good feedback when you make a shot.
Yep.
And this is why I love Ben Heck, because my brain is more like Rob's, where I'm like, let's throw 7 balls into the multi-ball. And Ben's like, why would we do that? I don't know, you figure it out.
It's pretty insane multi-ball. Well, do you and Blake want to talk about any questions about Rob Zombie, and then I think we could talk about Domino's a bit?
Sure.
Nothing. I think we've said everything there is to say.
Yep. Okay, then.
Let's throw hands up. How many people in this room are getting a Rob Zombie? Wow. Yay. Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly was the one that vetoed the... there's a few people I trust out there to show this kind of stuff while we're in development. I sent Brian the ball chop save animation. He's like, Charlie, no. No. No, Charlie. You can't do that. That's too far. So we did.
The problem was we couldn't think of anything grosser.
That was it.
Okay, so let's go into Domino's a little bit. This is Blake. How do you pronounce your last name? Is it Doomsnell?
Doomsnell, yeah.
Doomsnell. Blake is the graphic design artist at NASA locally here. And the reason we brought Domino's, the cabinet, with us this weekend is to show off the work that he did. Blake, why don't you tell everybody how you got the Domino's cabinet job?
Well, there was a little bit of a competition, a little art competition. Some people may be familiar with that was on Penn side. There was a gentleman by the name of Adam who works for Domino's, and he's the one who I guess originally approached you, Charlie, to work on this machine. That they were interested in doing this machine as kind of a promotional tool. And so they thought it'd be kind of fun to reach out to the pinball community and see, you know, what ideas for art packages, both Playfield, Translite, and the cabinet, people could come up with. And there was a little bit of a backlash on the contest side of things in terms of how some of the other graphic designers on Penn side responded to that. But, you know, I was very curious at what Adam and Charlie and everybody we're really hoping to accomplish with this game. And so I sent Adam a message and started a dialogue with him and, you know, told him, hey, look, I've got some ideas for what we could do for the cabinet artwork, the Translite and the playfield, you know, what the look and feel of this game could potentially have. And so we, you know, we started talking through some things and Adam and I really hit it off well. And so I sent some concepts of the cabinet artwork and we just kind of started discussing the overall art direction for the machine. So Adam and Charlie were nice enough to bring me on board to collaborate with them on the art direction of the overall machine and, you know, what the little details were going to be for the whole package.
And I think Blake has done a fantastic job, by the way. And I thought it was so cool that you wound up getting a job out of that little contest that Adam threw out there. I mean, that was fantastic. Now, how did you get into pinball, and tell us a little bit of your history there?
I've been in love with pinball ever since I was a little kid. My dad had a few machines. I grew up playing. I learned from a very young age how to play, and I've always just been around it. It's just been something that's been a hobby of my family's and myself for a long time. So, I've had years to study machines and look at the artwork and, you know, see the potential and what you can do with a machine, both in you know, very detailed ways and really simplistic ways. It can go, you know, it can work very well either way you go with it. So.
So what's cooler, designing space mission patches or pinball machines?
Oh, man. You know, they're both really cool, and they're both really challenging in different ways. this has been a fantastic opportunity to get to work on this machine, and it's a different medium I've never worked in. I mean, you've got a lot of restrictions when you're working on mission patches. I've done a number of designs for astronauts that have flown to on the Space Shuttle International Space Station, and, you're cramming a lot of information into roughly a 4-inch diameter, and... So yeah, this has been a lot of fun trying something different and working with a different canvas, you know, you could say. So I like it both.
What I like about the cabinet, and again, you know, it's a huge honor for us to be this tiny little pinball company that a year ago, like I said, you know, we were just trying to eke out an existence. To have a company the size of Domino's approach you and say we'd be interested in working with you and having enough faith in us to complete the project, I was absolutely blown away. But yeah, then Blake comes back with this cabinet package, and literally, I mean, from the time you turned it into us to the time we had it, a full cabinet, was what, 24 hours?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing how smooth this process has been so far, and when you're working with a large corporate entity like Domino's, you would think that there would be a lot of approvals that, you know, things would have to go through, and the turnaround time, Adam has just, it's been remarkable what he's been able to push through and get approval on from all of their marketing and branding folks. I mean, I was really nervous and curious up front about, how are we going to be able to use this brand? Are they going to be very strict on how we incorporate their different logos and the different variations of the logos? You know, of course, you've got, you know, there's a large style guide, as any major company has, that you got to, you know, work off of. But they've been so flexible. I mean, I think we submitted the final complete art package for all the cabinet artwork, back box, front of the cabinet, sides, and everything, to their marketing guys. And they approved it in one day, no changes at all. I mean, it was pretty impressive that we were able to do that. I mean, and they had no problem with how we incorporated their logo. I mean, we probably pushed the envelope on how we were spacing things in terms of, the Domino's name has to be a certain distance from the tile logo, or you know, it can only be beside it in a certain way. And they were like, no, look, we understand this is what's going to serve the game the best. So, and then, of course, the flipper buttons. I mean, that was something I did not know if they were going to approve that or not.
And it's like the coolest part of everybody walks up and, whoa, the white flipper button is the dot on the domino. And it's, yeah. It's like the most obvious thing, but it's so cool.
It's so simple. And yeah, I mean, it seems so obvious, but it worked out great. I mean, I really was not sure if they were going to allow us to do that, because typically corporations are pretty sensitive about how their logos are used. And anytime you try to use it in a manner that it wasn't originally intended for, they kind of seem to not be as thrilled about that. But I think they found it just as clever as we did. So I don't think there were ever any issues. I think the only thing that we had to do was, you'll notice that the logos are not mirror images on either side of the cabinet. The logo must face one direction. It has to lean towards the right. You can't change that. And so on the left side of the cabinet, you'll notice that the domino tile on that flipper, around that flipper button, is a different orientation than what it looks like on the right. But I don't think it makes a difference at all. I think it looks pretty good.
Can you talk about what kind of features people should expect to see in the Domino's game? And is it just for the store owners, or can anyone buy one, etc.? So features and availability.
Yeah, available. Anybody that wants to buy a Domino's game is more than welcome to do so. It is supporting a Domino's in-house charity. That is absolutely fantastic. If you work for Domino's and you have an illness or an accident or something like that, they try to help their own, which is great. That's where the proceeds from this game are going. And again, I mean, for us to be building it, it gave us the opportunity immediately. We hired two new employees to start pushing Rob Zombie so we can speed that up, get those out to everybody that's waiting for them patiently, and still build Domino's in a timely fashion. So, yeah, if you, it's literally pinball@dominoes.com is your email if you were interested in buying a Domino's game. It's going to the Domino's Worldwide Rally in June where it'll be revealed. Obviously, you can tell from the back glass that Scott Gullix from Riot Pinball, another guy, you know, just he's such a tremendous talent, and, Wrath of Olympus has kind of been out there, and it's just never been able to get off the ground. It's great to give him a shot, and it's great to see Blake, a guy on Pinside, who just contacts, and boom, he's got a pinball job. You know, it, to me, that's fantastic. So the Noid is coming back. You can tell from the back glass. He's going to be in there spinning. There's a couple of ramps. There's some other unique toys that we can't quite tell you everything about it yet. It's going to be more of a fan layout than anything else that we've ever done. Well, maybe not America's Most Haunted, except for the jump ramp.
I mean, you can basically make taxi with pizza, and that's your theme, right?
You give to me pizza.
Well, and Blake will tell you, when we took this job, I assumed it was going to be a very simple game to build and just the very bare bones. You know, okay, mm-hmm. Collect ingredients, build yourself a pizza, shoot the oven, something like that. And no, Domino's is so into this. The rules are getting deeper by the minute.
Yeah, so. It's been... I guess one of the reasons that I reached out to Adam about it, aside from the artwork, was I was just curious, you know, how far they wanted to take it, you know, how fun that they wanted to make this machine. And I, you know, there were people that were like, oh, you're going to make a pinball machine out of a pizza shop? I mean, how's that going to be a fun game? But I felt like this was an opportunity to take a theme and really run with it and show that you can take anything that may seem mundane and turn it into a really exciting game. And Taxi's a great example.
Yeah, there were a lot of classic video games. There were a lot of classic video games in the 1980s that are based off mundane jobs. Paperboy, Taxi, Tetris, even Asteroids is like cleaning up the house. And
yeah.
It's like everything nowadays has to be like, you know, bands and superheroes and or Tapper. Remember where you slide in the beers across the bar? And I just don't think we see enough of that, and people have kind of forgotten that repetitive, mundane tasks actually have a lot of game play potential.
Yeah. I mean, we are, like Charlie said, Domino's, what they've come up with for this game in terms of, you know, what they want to get across to the player, the different aspects of this company and in running a business like that, it's impressive how deep the rule set is. This is not going to be a simple game. I mean, it's going to be a very deep game. I think that...
Would you say it's a deep dish game?
I would say it's definitely a deep dish game. But it... I don't know. I mean, it's going to have a lot of modes to it. It's going to have a lot of objectives, a lot of modes, and it goes well beyond just making a pizza or making, you know, shooting a ramp to make a quick delivery. It's way beyond that. So we really are embracing the fact that we get to use the Noid because it was such an iconic mascot, and it kind of makes the game feel like a little bit of a throwback. It's kind of a retro type of a style as well. And so, you know, we're looking back at why the Noid was popular back then. You know, what were the things that made it fun, and how can we incorporate that into the gameplay, into the animations, the coding? I mean, the music, you know, we'd like to kind of make some of that a throwback to maybe some of the 90s games, just like you were talking about on the Dragula video mode. So I think it's a great opportunity. I think it's going to be a really fun game. It's going to have all hand-drawn artwork on the Translite and on the playfield, and it's going to be a packed playfield. So it's going to be great.
Cool. All right. We've got a few minutes left, so Brian Kelly.
When will it be available? How much will it cost?
The Domino's pizza game? Cost is going to be between $45 and $55, depending on the final bill of materials. We're not crazy enough to price it before we're done. And again, you can buy it at pinball@dominoes.com. We'll get you in there. The game will make its debut, as I said, in June at the Domino's Worldwide Rally in Las Vegas, where Katie and I are going to take the game out and show it for the first time. So we've got a lot of work to do between now and June, and so does David. David will be doing the dots on this as well. So it's a pretty big challenge, but I think we can get it done. Yeah. It's moved very fast.
Anyone else before we go?
Any other questions?
How many games can you guys get out in a month complete, like Rob Zombie games?
Rob Zombie games, right now we can do about a game and a half a day. but we just hired a couple more people. We've got 9 full-time employees in the shop now, which to me is, are you kidding? I mean, it's a long way from where we started 3 years ago. And
you, I'm the one that has to do
payroll
every week.
Yeah. KT has left her bank job. She's full-time in the shop now doing payroll, and she's our buyer or purchase girl. But, yeah, I mean,
it's kind of a challenge. I think you're getting to the point where you can probably sell more games than you can build. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but
right.
Something you have to think about going forward.
Ultimately, a goal, and I've said this from day one, the ultimate goal is we want to get to the point where we can handle 500 games a year. I don't want to go over that number. I think that's a good spot for us to be. I want to keep the price point as close to where we're at now. I mean, I don't know how long we can hold that forever, but I like being at that just under 6 price point, and we'll see where it goes. But yeah, right now it's about a game and a half a day. So, and as the new employees get trained, and again, you don't teach somebody how to build a playfield quickly. They have to work together, and then okay, now you're good enough to build one yourself, and they'll split, and that's what we're doing now. So, I mean, our cabinet guys are banging cabinets out faster than our playfield guys can, so.
Well, and then you've got Jamie playtesting.
Yeah, yeah. We actually have a gal that does, she worked at Rockwell, does nothing but playtest pinball machines all day long, and still every single game that leaves that shop, I final inspect before it leaves, so.
I'm going to wrap up?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. Anyhow, they are going to be stepping out into the hall to answer any final questions you have, because we are cutting short because Jersey Jack is coming up next. So let's thank them so much for their time.